All right, tacos. This is Chaplain Campice. My name is spelled K-A-M-P-H-U-I-S, but it's kind of confusing, so I always tell everybody, think of camp fire, switch fire with ice, and you have camp ice. That's how you say it, camp ice, Chaplain Campice. So I'm one of the chaplains here at the 150th Sow. Chaplain Ortiz is our wing chaplain. Chaplain Cachela is another one of our chaplains. He's a drill status guardsman. I am full-time out here, and so I'm always available. If you need help, you can certainly reach out, and chaplains are here to support you. I have about 15 years of experience in pastoral ministry. I've been engaged in lots of different things over the years. I've served as a police chaplain for 2.5 years as a volunteer, and I've been an Air Force chaplain now for over 7 years. So lots of experience that goes along with that. I am also your suicide prevention program manager for the wing. And so because of that, we're having this conversation today, and I'm joined by Miss Story Sorensen, who is our Director of Psychological Health, and also Miss Deb Roan, who is our Military One Source representative. She's not just assigned to the 150th, but she does support us. And so thank you, ladies, for joining us today, and appreciate the perspectives that you are going to share. Okay, so today we're going to talk about suicide prevention, and I know that when we talk about that, it stirs a lot of feelings for a lot of people. And if you're in a place today where you really need some care and some help, we want to encourage you that help is available. The suicide prevention hotline is 1-800-273-8255. It spells TALK, T-A-L-K. And if you're in the veteran or military community, you can choose option one, and you'll get to a caregiver who has a little bit better understanding and training related to some of the challenges that military and veterans face. So I think one of the things that's really important to recognize regarding suicide prevention is that it's everyone's responsibility. Used to be that in New Mexico, especially, used to have Smokey the Bear, right? And Smokey the Bear would come out, and what would he say? Only you can prevent forest fires. And the reality is that that's what it takes for suicide prevention. Each person doing their part to make sure that the people around them are safe, to make sure that they're safe for themselves, but also that the people around them are safe. And so it just requires that awareness, taking time to listen to one another and care about each other and to show that we really are a taco family. These are the things that I think everyone has to take hold of, is what is my personal responsibility? What can I do to prevent suicide? Ladies, do you have any thoughts on that?
One of the things that I often reflect on in terms of people feeling like they can't intervene is this cultural context around the act of suicide. So first of all, we apply the word committing suicide to it, which the training nowadays suggests that that's not an appropriate way to think about it. We commit crimes, and we certainly don't want to associate what's essentially a mental health crisis with the same thing as the same language as committing a crime. Two of the other ways that we describe suicide in our culture is do the right thing, you know, take a bullet for yourself. Have the courage to kill yourself. And people will say, I wouldn't have the guts to kill myself, as if it is somehow an act of courage. So there's this conflict there between whether this is an act of cowardice or an act of courage, and it's neither. It's a mental health crisis. And to try to term it as something else spins the fact that this is a moment where somebody is in need of the intervention from other humans. And when that happens, the crisis can be alleviated.
Yeah, so when each person has an opportunity to do their part and to keep everyone safe, you know, we become a safer place. Team Kirtland has said that their community action plan for this area is to have a community that is safe, respectful, and inclusive. And so when we think about safety, we think about, you know, lots of different things. We want workplace safety. We want safety in the home. We want people to be safe, you know, doing things around their house as far as like taking care of the lawn and things like that. Or if they're climbing up on the roof, we want them to be safe. But there's also the idea of safety with regard to our relationships. You know, domestic violence. We want people to be safe in the way that they connect with each other. And I think with regard to suicide prevention, we want people to be safe. And so it's really important that if a person is considering suicide, that when you're talking to them and you've asked them the question, are you thinking about suicide? And they say, yes, I am, that you really give them the understanding that their life is now in danger and that you need to get them help to keep them safe. And just recognizing that their life is important and important to you, and that you would like to make sure that they stay safe. And what you may find is that when people realize that they are thinking of suicide because they have, Story can talk more about it, but it's called a dissociative condition. If they have that dissociative state and they don't realize what they're thinking and what they're doing, and you ask them the question, are you thinking of suicide, and they kind of snap out of it, at that point, they might recognize that their life is in danger as well. And so that's the time where we have to spend the time just listening to them, listening to their pain, listening to their what has led them to this point. Because the pain that is present in a person considering suicide is immense, so much so that they have decided that the way to end their pain would be to end their life. And so it's important that we let them give voice to that and talk about it, but then also get them to the help to keep them safe. So I have some more things to say about safety later, but do you guys have anything to say about that, ladies?
That whole issue of staying safe, sometimes it's hard to see that there's a safety issue, right? You may be standing on the roof and thinking you're perfectly secure, but you can't necessarily anticipate that there's a slippery spot on the roof or that the wind's going to come along and you're unprepared for it. So how do you see that somebody is suicidal? We think that there's a number of indicators, and certainly in my clinical record taking, one of the things I often write down is that the person has a future orientation. Well, having a future orientation doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to kill themselves, because part of their future orientation could be, my pain's going to end when I kill myself. So there's a science to this, but there's also a level of human relationship that may come from instinct. It could come from intuition. Who knows what the mystery behind it is. But for sure, if you don't ask, you're not going to find out. I think back to the death of a very dear friend of mine, and in the hours before she killed herself, she and I were on the phone talking about what we were going to do the next day. And there was no next day for her, and I was astonished to find that she had been so depressed that 2 hours after hanging up, making future plans with me, she put a gun to her head. So how do you anticipate these things? I don't know that you can. So while we talk about suicide being a preventable action, there are times when the change in a person's thinking becomes so dramatic that unless you're there to see it and experience it or hear from them directly, your ability to interrupt that chain of thought and potential life-threatening action is going to be really limited. Nonetheless, what we look for when we're thinking about, is this person about to kill themselves, is this dissociative state. So the human being is hardwired for survival. Everything about us is focused on, how do I stay alive? How do I get out of this situation alive? And of course, it leads to all of our other cultural connotations about no atheists in foxholes, right? So when we're considering ways to die, that's a pretty good indicator that something really dramatic has changed in our thinking. And this is what we call a dissociative state. Another term for it, if you want to look it up, is dissociative fugue. And that person is not in their right mind. They have the classic thousand-yard stare. They're not tracking what you're talking about. When you are talking about plans for the next day, to revert back to my own example. And when you say something to them like, "Are you thinking of killing yourself?" it is as if that person had you inside their head as an alternative to what they were thinking about. And so you see them sort of snap out of this dissociative state and grasp on to the help you've just offered as if, "Oh my God, how did she know? She read my mind." Well, of course, you didn't read their mind necessarily, but you did read the other signs and symptoms of somebody who's not okay. And when you're able to do that, you really are offering that person another chance at saving their own life with your, one hopes, loving assistance. But in the end, they get to determine whether they're going to live or die. So you just have to offer out the hand and hope they'll take it. There's a couple other facts that go along with this dissociative state and people who do die by suicide. And that is about 95% of death by suicide is accompanied with either intoxication by alcohol or some other substance. People in their right minds aren't likely to kill themselves. And so alcohol, as we know, is a depressant, and it does have an impact on the kinds of things that you would do to keep yourself safe. It's a disinhibitor. We all know about people becoming the life of the party when they're drunk. Unfortunately, alcohol can also lead to you being death by your own hand. So that's a real clear factor. If somebody is drunk and talking about things you haven't heard them talking about, that's a really good time to ask the question, are you thinking of killing yourself? Are you thinking about suicide? And look for that response where suddenly there's a new awareness in them that they were the greatest risk to their own life in the moments before this, and now they're recognizing there's another option.
Well, thank you for giving us that strong description there, Story. I think what I'd like to do also is move this discussion away from the focus on suicide to the idea of what we can do to prevent people from maybe getting to that point. And so how do we have a culture that respects one another, that is concerned about the other person, even if what they stand for is 100% different than what I stand for, they're still a human being. And can I be able to interact with them in that way? And with regard to our culture here at the 150th Sow, that's a fellow taco, somebody that's raised their right hand to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the great state of New Mexico, and is willing to stand shoulder to shoulder with me and with everyone else to be able to do that. And so that deep respect for the willingness to make that same commitment and to see them as another human being that is valuable, those are things that I think go a long way toward working against this. So this person knows that they're cared for. The Department of Defense Suicide Prevention Office has said for Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, which is what we're in now, September, that they want you to connect to protect. Because the idea of building connection is the number one protective factor against suicide. A lot of times, not always, obviously, but a lot of times when people know that they're loved and cared for, they don't want to die. And so it's very important that we make that connection. I think especially now, because we're in this COVID situation and we keep talking about social distancing. Social distancing is kind of a misnomer. We really want physical distancing. People need to stay connected socially. And so find ways to connect with people through social media, through, calling them up on a phone. We used to do that, you know. You can text them, too, but it's not always the same. You can reach out to them through, you know, a Zoom call or whatever it is, you know, FaceTime, somehow making that connection so that you're letting people know that you care about them and that they're important to you. So connecting to protect. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I like that. I like that concept a lot. The connection, of course, is about relationship, and relationships are hard. They're always hard. People who are married 50 years, 75 years, you know, for the newspaper, they may give a quote about just do whatever your wife tells you. But in the course of that 50 to 75 years, there were some tough times. And relationships have a cycle. The cycle is pretty simple. The first part of it is attunement. And when you first meet somebody and you're developing either a friendship or perhaps an intimate relationship, that attunement is really obvious. There's chemical responses going on. You think about them all the time. You want to be with that person all the time. You can't wait to hear from them. Attunement also happens with parent and child, especially young babies, and parents are completely tuned in to what that baby is needing and asking for. And when the baby's distressed, the parents are distressed. So that's attunement. But somewhere along in that relationship, there's going to be a disruption. And for babies, we know what the disruption is, right? It's as simple as I'm hungry and you're not feeding me. But for adults or a younger person's relationship, the disruption can come from the smallest thing. And it is during those times of disruption where people who feel like they don't have resources to change what's happening might start to cycle down into some suicidal thought. The way to fix disruption in a relationship is to repair it. And repair is hard. Relationships are hard. Disruption hurts, and repair is hard. You have to recognize what happened that caused the disruption. You may be the person who needs to apologize. Your behavior may need to change pretty dramatically, or maybe it's just a little tweak that needs to happen. There's the whole range to consider. But until you repair that relationship, you're not going to get back to attunement. And attunement keeps people alive. So that connection part, you can't overstate that. We are a social species. We do not do well alone. Even the concept of a lone wolf, again, I always come back to our cultural connections there. But the lone wolf doesn't survive very long. He needs a pack, and so do we.
Hey, Tacos, it's Deb Roan. I am the Military OneSource consultant for New Mexico, and I've been in this position here at the 150 for a little over 10 years. I have a master's degree in counseling, have done private practice. I am a certified vocational rehab counselor because I have worked with veterans through voc rehab, and I've run a traumatic brain injury program, a treatment foster care program. What I like to say is I've been working since the dinosaur ages, so there's not much that I haven't done in the area of people taking care of people and giving people assistance. The reason that I wanted to be here today is to talk about, getting assistance, getting some help, having somebody to talk to that you can make a connection with early on before things get really, you're in a bad way or the situation is in a bad way. And for those of you who know me in Taco Land, I love to cook. And my family says that I make the best mashed potatoes in the whole world. But every time I fix those mashed potatoes, I have this thought process, because those of you who like to cook know that as you're watching those potatoes begin to simmer, and they have to come up to a boil. And if you turn your head for a minute, or you're not really concentrating, you're not really focusing, that pot of potatoes will boil over and create the biggest mess in the entire world. And every time I watch as I'm making mashed potatoes, I think about how very similar that is, and it's a good metaphor for life. Because we really have to get to things, pay attention when things are just simmering. Because if we're really not careful, they can boil over pretty quickly. And so that simmer stage is where hopefully all of us recognize that we're having some issues, we're having some problems. And as Joe said, as Story said, right now it's really easy to get overwhelmed because we are so isolated and there's so much going on. So one of the things we can do is find somebody to talk to. And as Story also said about relationships, oftentimes you need a third party to take a look at what's going on in your life or in your relationship and offer not only just to listen to you, but maybe offer some suggestions. So just real quick, I want to talk about Military OneSource non-medical counseling. And what non-medical counseling is all about, it's those everyday life issues that I guarantee every one of us that's listening today, every one of us in our taco family is going to experience at some point in our lives. It's inevitable. It's things like relationship or marriage issues. It's things like parenting. Because maybe your 16-year-old all of a sudden is acting like a 2-year-old. Or vice versa, your 2-year-old thinks that he or she is a 16-year-old. It is the stress of COVID right now, the stress of being alone, of not being able to see your family like you normally do. It's things like deployment. The tacos, we've been through some massive deployments in the last year and a half or so, and those are things that bring up stress. Grief and loss, because unfortunately we all experience that in our lives as well. So those are the kinds of issues that we want to offer assistance. And non-medical counseling is that. Absolutely free of charge. You don't pay anything to do counseling through Military OneSource. And to get started, it's as easy as pick up the phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from anywhere in the world, and talk with a triage consultant that's probably one of the best listeners in the whole world. Or it's as easy as get on your computer and do a chat and say, I want to do some counseling. And that's all it takes to get started. Right now, because of COVID, we're mostly doing live video instead of face-to-face, although I believe there are some counselors in New Mexico who are now doing face-to-face. And don't worry if you live in Raton or you live in Colorado. Military OneSource has counselors all over the country. And if we don't have somebody already lined up in our network in the area where you live, by gosh, we'll find somebody and get you set up. You can also do counseling over the phone or, again, online chat. I mean, what could be easier than sitting down at your computer and at least talking, putting words to what's going on with you and knowing that there's somebody there that's going to respond. So reach out anytime, and there's going to be somebody available for you to talk to right away and then somebody for you to talk with on an ongoing basis to work through whatever the issues are. I know one of the things we've talked about in our community action team meetings is that often people think nobody else has experienced the problems that they're going through. And my friends, I have to tell you know what? Most of the time, 99.9% of the time, we've all experienced what you're going through. And that's that whole thing of you're not alone. Somebody out there has gone through it and can say to you, I went through something similar, and I got through it, and that's the most important thing.
I want to try to do justice to your metaphor and think about those boiling potatoes. They could be simmering away, but if they don't boil, you're not going to get mashed potatoes, are you? And the end result is worth the process. So we actually have what's called post-traumatic growth. And we've all heard about post-traumatic stress disorder. So something bad happens, and you have a reaction to it that is highly interruptive of almost everything in your life. But there is treatment and there is recovery from PTSD and there is post-traumatic growth. So somebody who's had suicidal ideation, maybe even somebody who's made a suicide attempt, things can change in your life after that. You grow and learn from that experience. You can become an advocate for others. You have a special clarity about the problem, at least as you experience. You are the expert in your own experience, and your voice is critical to the rest of us. We need to learn from what you have learned. And I want to encourage people who have had that kind of experience to come and talk to me. Let me know what has happened to you, and let's see if we can't find a way to help you help us make this something that everybody knows about as a way to march on through and get to the other side and be better as a result of it for the life experience that came from it.
Piggyback on what Deb said about help seeking, and the idea is seeking help. You know, Deb said it's how easy it is because there's so much access to care. The difficulty is getting over that hurdle of admitting that you need help, of admitting that it's a sign of strength to ask for help rather than a sign of weakness. And here's what I mean by that. I'll give you a couple examples. So a real simple example. I don't know how many of you have issues with your computers, but we are in the Air National Guard and in the Air Force, and there's a lot of computer problems. And so what I always say is keep calm and call COM, right? So just call up to COM and they can help you out. Now, what you find is that when you call COM, they usually have an answer for you, and it's a pretty simple answer, and they can get you to walk through something, and now you're back in, you're doing your work, and you're not as frustrated as you were before. It's a very simple example, but this is somebody who has reached out for help, and the end result is that they are better, stronger, better able to do the things that they need to do because they asked for help. Help seeking is a sign of strength, not a sign of weakness. Another example would be with regard to our physical well-being. If you're out doing some training sometime and you break your ankle, it will be much better for you in the long run to not walk along on that ankle for the next 5 days, but to get in, to get help, to get it set, to get, you know, whatever needs to happen, if it's a surgery or if there's any kind of cast that need to happen, get the medical assistance that you need so that you can get healed and get back into the fight, and you'll be much better off than if you didn't seek help. So you see how seeking help is a sign of strength. It's not a sign of weakness. And so we need to get past the idea that if I seek help, I'm admitting that I'm weak. Guess what? We're all weak. And we're all weak by ourselves, but we're strong together. And so when we reach out to get help, that's when we see that our real strength is found. None of us can stand on our own. We're not an army of one. We are all together as the Air National Guard, as a Taco family, and the mission can't go on without any one of us. And so we all depend on each other, whether we admit it or not. So we're stronger, we're better together than we are by ourselves or apart. So help seeking is important, and it's something that we need to build into our culture, that we are those who seek help when we need it, because every one of us is going to need help in one way or another. And so just getting past that stigma is important. I think another thing is, and Story, maybe you can say more about this, but when people have come to get help because they are experiencing some mental health issues, there are very often no adverse conditions that go against their career. I know that so many people say that. They'll be like, oh, well, I don't want to go there because they'll take away my career. They'll take away my ability to fly or whatever it is. You know, they'll take away my weapon if you're in security forces. That's not what it's about. It's about making sure that you're safe and that you're able to get back in if you can to the fight. And so it's not supposed to be a punitive process. It is not a punitive process. It's all about getting you the help that you need. And so seeking help, finding that help is important. And if you're concerned about it, you can always come talk to a chaplain, because chaplains are 100% confidential. We have privileged communication. So even if you tell us that you are thinking of killing yourself or you do want to hurt someone else, we can't tell anyone. We can't report it. So we're always a good first place to go where you can you know, at least process where you're at, and we can decide if there's other places that would be able to help you, and we can escort you and help you get the help that you need. So there are a lot of resources available. It just takes the ability to say, you know what, I need help, and realize that that's a sign of strength and not a sign of weakness.
So as a director of psychological health, I don't have that kind of 100% confidentiality and unlimited privilege. I am constrained by some requirements to report things. If you tell me you are homicidal or suicidal or being abused or abusing someone, those are things that I do need to report. But if you come to me and you're suicidal, that's not an automatic time for you to get out of the military. Your time here is done. In general, we think about a year's worth of mental health treatment. If it's going to take more than a year, yeah, okay, maybe now is not the time for you to be in the military. But if this is something that has come up situationally, it may be relationship-oriented, or you'd be surprised what the percentage of suicidal ideation is that's prompted by financial problems. And now during COVID, many, many, many people are having financial problems. Those things are not going to result in you being dismissed from the military. They are going to result in you getting a lot of support and counseling and the kinds of skills taught to you that you get to choose from, what's going to work for you, and they could be life-changing. They're certainly going to be life-saving. But then what you do with them afterwards, I see tremendous potential in people who have walked through these dark moments and come out the other side. And when you stay in the military, you are a source of incredible knowledge and power and future for the other airmen who need to see that you can recover from this. You can be incredibly successful afterwards as a result of it. There's a few leadership people. I can't come up with names at the moment, but I know that there have been highly ranked soldiers and airmen who have come forward with their history of suicidal thinking and maybe even suicide attempts, and they're rewarded for it. I think that's really appropriate, and there's no reason why somebody at a lower rank wouldn't also get those same rewards. Certainly what you're going to see is a change in your life, and your life's going to be better as a result. So, wow, who wouldn't want that?
So, to wrap up, I just want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this. This issue is so important, and we need to make sure that we're doing all we can to keep the people around us safe and keep ourselves safe. So again, if you're in that place and you're really hurting and you need help, please do reach out and call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255. And for veterans and military, choose option one. Or reach out to any one of these resources that we've talked about today, whether it's Military One Source or your director of psychological health or your chaplains or any number of places that you can get help. Remember that seeking help is a sign of strength and not a sign of weakness. And we're better together. And so we want to do all we can to keep everyone around us, including ourselves, safe. So thank you for listening, and have a great AirGuard day.